Hey, this is Jacob from Trending Topics. You might have bought Bitcoin stocks or ETFs, but have you ever invested in a real person? Mike Merrill claims that he really is the first publicly traded person in the world. That means that you can buy a share of Mike today for $5 to $6, and then you have the right to vote on what Mike will do next. Become a vegetarian, for example. And now I'm very honored to have Mike Merrill in our podcast studio today. Welcome, Mike.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me here.
Yeah. So my first question is, before you came to this interview, did you have to ask your shareholders about it?
I used to ask them every time I did an interview or gave a talk or anything like that. But the shareholders, they just always said yes. And so at a certain point, I was just like, okay, I'll just do all of those things. Because usually what happens, not always, but usually doing a talk, people listening or will get a little bit interested and maybe buy a share or two. So that's good for the shareholders because they're the ones also selling the shares on the market. So they like it when I talk about the project.
Okay, I get that. So you say you are the first publicly traded person in the world. Why did you take this decision to do such a very radical thing?
So when I initially started, I was doing a lot of internet projects. This was like in the mid-2000s. And I mean, a lot of things that people do online, it's very collaborative. So I was like working with a lot of different people and kind of these different things, usually not quite businesses, but, you know, maybe like a little blogging thing over here or doing like some video stuff. And it was a way to sort of bring all these projects together under one umbrella, under one roof, and just say, all of these projects are mine, but now I can have shares. So I can like if you and I were doing a project, I could maybe pay you in shares instead of money. Or if you wanted to be involved, you could buy some shares and that would help everybody. And then if you didn't want to be involved, you could leave and just sell your shares and walk away. And I thought that's a really great model for collaboration. And then what happened was it was kind of like the invisible hand of the market. That idea is it just sort of shifted onto my personal life. And the more I posted about what I was going to do, the more excited the shareholders got. And so that was, I kind of followed their lead into giving up more and more control until ultimately every major life decision I now put up for vote.
Mm-hmm. So basically that means you gave up control about the major decisions in your life, right?
Kind of. Again, I always get to choose what is a vote, and so I have some control there. And my rule is anything I would normally ask my friends advice for is a shareholder question. So if I'm actually struggling with something, you know, when I go into a restaurant, I'm just going to order something to eat. I'm not usually going to put up a vote every single time. First of all, that would be monotonous for the shareholders to vote every time, but usually I kind of have a direction that I'm going. So typically it's been these kind of larger decisions about where I live or taking a new job or, you know, things where I'm actually trying to figure something out for myself.
Mm-hmm. How does it like work? So I could go to your website, pay $5 to $6 each share, and then what happens next?
So basically it's like you create an account and then you deposit funds into your account. So then you have, you know, money, and then you look at the market and other shareholders are putting up buy and sell offers. So you can either, you know, put up a buy offer and wait for, you know, a really good deal. Or if it feels like you want to jump in right away, you can just take one of those sell offers. Once you have shares, then you can, you know, there's announcements. I send out an email whenever there's a new vote and you can go in and vote, and it's your vote times how many shares you have. So, you know, I have a few shareholders with a lot of shares and they really tend to swing the votes back and forth. But there's so many shareholders with, you know, 1 to 10 shares that mass of people can also kind of shift and counteract some of those bigger shareholder interests.
Okay, interesting. But are you still like the majority shareholder, or are you, do you have a minority stake, or how?
So when I started, there wasn't enough demand for an IPO. You know, usually if a company's going to go public, they do a bunch of announcements. You've heard of them before. You know, it's kind of a big deal. There's banks helping to sell their shares. For me, it was like, I think I sold to like 12 people when I started. So I kind of decided just out of nothing. I was like, there's 100,000 shares and I'm going to start selling them at $1 a share. So I was selling directly onto the market. It was like a direct listing. And over time, as the share price went up, I decided that I'm only going to sell off my shares kind of at auction in like big chunks and let the shareholders kind of be the market makers. So I still hold technically the majority of shares. I think I have about, I want to say it's like 80,000, but I don't vote my shares. So the only shares that vote are in the hands of the shareholders.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So some people might think that this is an art project.
Mm-hmm.
Is it, or is it more?
I think it's on the line a little bit because it is an experiment. I don't think this isn't something where I'm trying to say, hey, everyone should do this. It's more like, let's look at how capitalism works. Let's look at how shares can affect different things. Let's take this big capitalist structure and try to apply it to a person, and sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. So it is that kind of exploring element that I think kind of feels very art project. At the same time, I've been doing this since 2008, and it's very much a real part of my life. Like I live it every single day. And so from that aspect, it feels kind of more like quote unquote real life than it does an art project.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so you're doing this since many years. So what was the best decision like your shareholders made for you?
That's a good question. I had this whole project where they controlled my romantic life over a very long period of time. And that was very fun. Ultimately, we decided that they wouldn't control my romantic life. And now I'm free of that control. And I decide that for myself because it was a little bit, I don't like to put up votes that affect other people in my life. And so it was hard to have the shareholders control that aspect of my life without controlling my romantic partner. And so that's been kind of the tension of shareholder control. It was still a lot of fun and I'm glad we did it. I just don't want to do it again. Very recently, there was a job I got really excited about that I put up for a vote. And it wasn't until the vote started coming in that I realized that I'm mostly freelancing right now. And I was like, I don't want a full-time job. And so like, as the vote kind of shifted over into majority yes, I kind of panicked and I was like, wait, I changed my mind. So I had to go back and tell them and try to convince everyone to vote no after I'd written up this big thing about like how I wanted to apply for this job. And I was able to convince enough that it was no, but it does really clarify your thinking when it's in black and white and you're seeing the number go back and forth.
Right. Okay. So that would be like the best decision.
Best is hard just because it's been so long. Best decision.
Or the most influential.
Yeah. I think the most influential was control of my romantic life. Because that was really, it was super personal. It forced me to be like, you know, really honest about something that I'm normally pretty private about and really like kind of figure that stuff out. So ultimately, that was actually like a series of votes, you know, over time. But the idea of giving control to the shareholders was a vote itself. I was like, I asked them, do you want control of my romantic life? And they said, yes. So that was the most impactful. I'm not sure it was the best, but it was definitely the one that impacted me the most.
Okay. And the worst one?
The worst one was, well, there's two. One was, I'm not sure if you've heard of polyphasic sleeping. It's this weird idea where you can take naps. If you take these perfectly timed naps around the clock, you can sleep far less, like 3 to 4 hours total. And it's absolutely not true. But I put that up for a vote if I should try it. And the shareholders are like, yeah, you should definitely try that. And I almost went crazy from lack of sleep. It was awful. So that was really bad. They also had me register to become a Republican in the United States, which is not my political party. And so that was very hard. And I did that for a number of years and then was finally like, okay, can I please change it back? And they said yes. Yeah. So those are two of the worst ones.
Okay, I just wanted to ask if you ask your shareholders who you should vote for in the next election. Do you do that?
Kind of. I don't ask specifically who, but I do ask them if I should endorse a candidate or if I should support a candidate. And often I end up choosing to vote for the candidate that I'm supporting. So in the last presidential election in the US, I was supporting Bernie Sanders, which is a strange place for someone who's very capitalist to be supporting. So that was a little bit, that was confusing, but I was like, as a full-blown capitalist, I was supporting Bernie Sanders. And Yeah. So yeah, they definitely influence my thinking around politics, but they don't tell me specifically which box to check.
Mm. And you also asked your shareholders to become a vegetarian, right?
Yeah, over the years, a lot of different kind of health and diet questions as I've kind of, either read a book or learn something more about either being healthy or the ethics of eating meat and things like that. And I'll say, hey, what about this? And a lot of times that depends on where shareholders are at as well. Like if a big shareholder just recently decided to start eating meat again, then maybe it goes one way or the other. So right now I have no specific dietary restrictions. I'm just supposed to generally try to eat healthy in a very vague way. But yeah, we've done experiments where I stop drinking or I take a break from drinking coffee and a lot of diet and health questions generally.
Okay. Interesting. So which rules do you follow when you put up a new vote? I mean, of course, you wouldn't ask your shareholders if you should like jump off the bridge or something like that.
Exactly.
Which rules do you follow?
My one rule is just kind of as I was saying before, just if I'm asking friends advice, and sometimes I'll catch myself, like I'll actually be talking to a friend and I'll realize, oh wait, this is a shareholder question. And sometimes the shareholders will suggest something as well. They'll be like, what do you think about this? And I'll take their advice and put it up. But because I have that control, I try to only put things up that I'm actually trying to figure out. That's kind of the honest way to put these questions out. And sometimes they're really boring because sometimes I struggle with really boring things, but usually the votes that really instigate a lot of conversation are ones where I'm not really sure, you know, where it's like I could go either way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if I will buy a share today, or maybe many shares, what will happen with the money? I mean, how will you invest it? As a shareholder, I expect you to invest it in the product,
right?
When
you deposit a share, I take possession of it, but I can't spend that money because the person you bought the share from might want to withdraw their money. So I just have actually a bank account of cash waiting for people to ask for it back that I don't spend. Now, when I sell shares into the market, that gives me some money that I can operate with. And usually anytime I'm using those funds for something, that's also a shareholder vote. So if it's something like, hey, I wanna go on this trip and do something or go visit these people or start this new, you know, web project, those are all shareholder votes. Recently on my flight over to Vienna from Los Angeles, I was coming to give a talk and you know, it's like an 11-hour flight. And I was sitting there and the airport was empty, I think, you know, because of COVID and everything. And I thought, man, I wonder how much it costs to upgrade to business class. And I went and asked, and it was like 800 something US. And I was like, ah, oh, that's kind of steep. And then I had the idea to ask my shareholders if I could sell shares to, you know, have a seat that lies down, you know, and allows me to sleep. I've never flown business class before. So I didn't have enough time for a vote because I had like an hour and 20 minutes until the flight. And so I went to, we have kind of a chat, like a Slack channel that we're on, and I just got enough buy-in where they were like, you can do it, but you have to document everything and share it with us, everything that happened. So I quickly sold like, I think it was like 120 or something shares, went, upgraded my ticket, and it was amazing. So that felt like having like a weird superpower, or suddenly I was just like, oh, it's not, you know, it's, I had this thing that I invented, these shares, and I was able to transfer that into, you know, a business class flight across the world, which is pretty great.
Okay, that maybe was the fastest crowdfunding campaign in the world. I don't know.
You know, that's a really good point. I should check because it might be. Yeah, it was. I was surprised how fast they sold because I put those shares up on the site for sale, and then mentioned on the message board that we use. I was like, hey, I'm going to send an email out to all the shareholders, but if you know you guys that approved it can kind of get first dibs. And by the time I sent the email, most of them were gone. I got a bunch of emails from people saying, where's the good deal on the shares? You know, because I'd priced them just like a little bit competitively. And yeah, they sold out like super fast. So that was pretty, I was like, oh, I should have sold more of them, I guess. Supply and demand.
Absolutely. Yeah. So basically, can you make a living out of it or...
I have at times. I started a company years and years ago, and as we were getting started, we weren't paying ourselves, and so I asked the shareholders if I could have basically 1,000 shares to just sell in order to live on for a while until we got up and running. But usually not. Like, I like that money to be more kind of project oriented. There's some costs as far as like hosting, and I have a friend who helps me with development on the site, and so I pay him some in shares, and then he'll cash out, so I have to pay him. And so I like to keep those things pretty separate and keep myself sustained through, you know, a job and work and things like that.
Okay. I get it. Yeah. So technically speaking, I mean, is it even legal? I mean, aren't you kind of like the slave of other people?
Well, yeah, you don't actually own me, right? Because you can't own a person. What you're buying is just voting rights. There's no actual ownership of anything like real. And so I think my theory is, and I'm not a lawyer, but in the United States, the SEC and the government, they have a lot of rules around issuing securities for a company, but I'm not a company. There's nothing incorporated. It's just a person, and you're just voting on that person's life. So my argument would be that this does not fall under that jurisdiction. I would say it's also probably in a legal gray area. I like to tell people that I'm a high-risk investment, because who knows what's going to happen. But on the other hand, I've been doing it for so long that it seems pretty safe at this point.
Okay. So you started this in 2008, right?
Mm-hmm.
Back then, I think there was no Bitcoin around.
Yeah, or it had just started, but I hadn't heard of it yet. I don't think I heard about it until 2009 or 2010 or something. But yeah, maybe the white paper was out or something. I'm not sure.
Right, yeah. But if you would start this today, I guess you would start to like bring yourself on the blockchain.
Like, I've been watching all of the cryptocurrency stuff and DeFi and all the stuff happen, and like, you could easily replicate my entire model right now out of the box. Like, there's this website called Snapshot that, like, let's say you issued your own token that lets you do voting. All the market mechanics and trading could happen easily. You wouldn't have to program your own site. You wouldn't have to pay gas fees, which would make it expensive, but you know. The whole world of like basically being able to play with these giant capitalist economic ideas I feel like it's just exploded in the last 10 years or so. It's been pretty amazing.
So that sounds like you already thought about using the blockchain in the future.
Definitely. I think especially, there's stuff coming about lowering the fees and making it easier to trade and things like that and cheaper. But I have my shareholders, I think, are pretty split on it. I have a lot of big shareholders that are pretty anti-crypto and have a lot of strong beliefs about how they have some negative thoughts. Then I have a lot of shareholders that have really positive thoughts. A group of shareholders actually wrote me a proposal, like a PDF that they sent me about, here's what we could do, here's how it would work, step by step, all of the different things. Here's how we'd like migrate everybody over. So that's probably going to be a vote, possibly before the end of the year. There will be a vote to see if we should do it. From my perspective, as long as I can still post a vote and get shareholder involvement, it's the same to me. So this is one of those really good questions where I'm happy to leave it in shareholder hands.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Do you also know who your shareholders are? I mean, you mentioned that there are like some big ones, big whales.
Yes, big whales.
Who are they?
When I started, obviously I knew all of them. It started just with friends and friends of friends. Over the years, I think I just went up over 1,300 shareholders now, and by far the majority I don't know. Even when I look, there's a leaderboard on the site, and I think it shows the top 25 shareholders. I know less than half of them for sure. Some of them I've kind of like, met online and have interact with, with some frequency, but many of them are total strangers, which makes putting up a vote really hard, because sometimes I know how some of the bigger whales that I know what kind of questions they're going to ask. So as I'm writing up a vote, I'll be like, oh, I know Josh is going to ask this kind of question, and I know, Douglas is going to be concerned about this. So I can kind of like prep for those. But some of the other ones, I have no idea. So they'll come in and kind of surprise me with, either their concerns or thoughts or something.
Okay, so basically you switched over the years from asking your friends to asking strangers, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely like a mix, and yeah, but now definitely more strangers. But what's nice is no one's voting unless they bought shares, and that hurdle of just like, even though it's only in between that $5 and $6 range at any time, it's just enough to stop people from doing it super casually. Like, you really have to want to do it. And I think once you become a shareholder, you know, then you're literally invested. And so these people, even if they don't know me, they are trying to think of what's the best answer. And they might not be what I think is the best answer, but as long as they truly believe how they're voting, then I think the system will keep working.
Okay. What do you think, why do people want to become shareholders? I mean, do they think of like, I get some power over another person, or do they want to be part of like a strange project? Or
I think it's probably a combination of a lot of that stuff. I think it's really fun to play with money, in the way that, you know, Monopoly is a very popular game because you get to be rich and buy and sell houses or whatever, so, and property. So I think it's fun to sort of be able to dabble in some of these things. Voting is definitely fun. People enjoy that the most. And, you know, as I've gotten older, I don't struggle with as many questions. So it makes it a little harder to put up really good votes. And I hear that from the shareholders from time to time. And then I think there's a pretty good community of people around. And when they start to engage, especially with one another, it gets really interesting. And I think, I don't know if that many like real friendships have formed, you know, shareholder to shareholder, but there's definitely like people, even like right now as we're talking, that are probably chatting on the Slack, you know, without me, kind of thing. And they're just like talking about their day or whatever. And so there's kind of an actual community that's developed there, which I think is also valuable.
Okay. So what would you say? I mean, are you a capitalist, or is this the way of how you want to make a point about capitalism, or how you want to try to criticize capitalism?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all capitalists in that we all operate in a capitalist system. And even if you are the most ardent anti-capitalist, and more power to you if you are, you still have to exist in this structure. And so for me, I'm just taking the capitalist structure as default, and rather than try to fight it, it's like, what happens if we just follow it to its extreme, right? And again, like, sometimes that's going to work and sometimes it's going to fail. And I think the ways that it fails probably reflects on some of the problems in capitalism. So capitalism is certainly a system that has its flaws. You know, I think we can all agree that anything that large is going to harm a lot of people as well as help and offer opportunities in these things. And so I think it's a good reflection of that and saying, hey, we need to have well-regulated markets. You know, we need to make sure that these things are all done fairly. We need to make sure it's not the same people just getting more and more rich. And, you know, even within my small version of this, you still see this massive power structure between the few shareholders that have a lot of shares and the long tail that have hardly any. And they have far less power individually. They have to band together to get anything done, which is honestly the boat that I think a lot of us are in.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So you are the first publicly traded person. Are there others? I mean, did some others follow you?
There's been some experiments that I've seen. As far as I know, no one has stuck with it. There was someone that did something in crypto, and I interviewed him, and you know, again, I never met him in person, but I would say we're friendly, if not friends. His name is Alex Mazmej, and you can look him up, and he has a token. And he did an income share agreement. So he basically issued his tokens and said, I can't remember what the time period was, but he was like, for the next X number of years, any money I make is going to get, a percentage is going to get distributed to these token holders. And then he experimented with asking them some questions, but that wasn't really the point of his project. And there's been some other people that have either in crypto or not kind of experimented with it, but they haven't stuck with it. So as far as I know, I'm still the only, or I'm currently the only, and you know, also was the first. I think I kind of invented the idea, you know, like I don't think it existed before that. And again, I'm not even sure it's necessarily a good idea. It's not something that I'm trying to convince people to do. I would say come be a shareholder and see how it works from that end. When I built the project, I very much built it thinking, you know, what is this experience like for the shareholder? Like I really built it kind of with the shareholder in mind and trying to think of them as the customer, so to speak. And like, how do I keep them involved? How do I make it fun for them? So I think they have more fun than I do.
Okay, so that doesn't sound like you would recommend it to other people, right?
Not exactly. I think there's some really interesting and valuable things from it. Like I think having a formal relationship with a group of people by whatever means, whether it's a mailing list or you know, something beyond just social media, something where you have a almost like a board or some people you can bounce ideas off and get their feedback, has been huge for me. Like that's, again, just that process of writing up a question and getting feedback from people is amazing. Like this morning I woke up and my share price was, I think it was 35 cents down, you know, somebody had sold. But like, that was kind of a bummer. Like I was a little bit, I was like, man, I have a podcast to go on later. I want to talk about how my share price is up, not down. Like this sucks. So like as much as I know that it's my own invention and all of this stuff, it's still like, it hits you. Like it's depressing when someone sells and wants to leave and take their money and stuff. So yeah, like there's definitely aspects of it where I'm like, I don't know that this is a good way for everyone to be. And that's, I think that's part of it being an experiment, is I haven't quite figured out what the, how to scale it yet. Maybe someday I will.
Okay. Is it the first thing you do in the morning? Look at the stock price?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's saved like the first thing on my phone is I open up before I check my email or social media or anything. I check my share price.
Okay. And the share price determines how you feel during the day?
Definitely for the first little bit. And it's way more dramatic being in Europe because all the trades are happening while I'm sleeping. So usually I wake up and it'll be the same as when I went to bed because most of my shareholders are in North America, even though I now have a pretty good Vienna contingent, which is pretty exciting. But yeah, so waking up here and seeing it, it's almost changed, I think, almost every day that I've been here, which is pretty wild.
Okay. So last question, what will be the next vote you will put on?
I have this kind of combo of big votes and small votes, and the next small vote, I do these like monthly challenges. So this month I'm doing these a little like 3-minute podcast every day. So coming up will be another monthly challenge vote, and they'll decide if I should do, you know, 100 push-ups every day, read a certain number of books or something like that. That's kind of light and holds me accountable. I think the next big vote will probably be, as I mentioned, about this conversion to crypto. And that'll be interesting because I think people are going to get really passionate on either side of that. So the people that brought it to me with their proposal, I was like, hey, let's work on this and make sure we kind of pre-address the concerns that I think some people will have, and we'll really, you know, give it our all and make the best possible proposal. But yeah, I think you can look forward to that one in the probably next month sometime.
Great. Absolutely fascinating. Mike, thanks for being with us today, and thanks for sharing your story.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much. It was really fun to talk with you.